Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Love in the Wager by Casey Stockton. Narrated by Rory Barnett and Mary Sarah. Prologue. Edward.
Mr. Thornton, you've received a letter.
Sighing, I slapped the cards on the playing table, turning frustrated eyes on my butler Melville. Could he not see that I was in the middle of an important game? One more hand in my favour, and I would win enough to pay off my vows to Mr. James. I took the letter, requesting Melville to bring more ale. My apologies, I said to Mr. James, flipping the letter to see who it was from. Lord Stalsbury. I could get to it later. I tossed it aside and turned my attention to the man across from me. His eyes were sharp for a man so old, noteworthy when considering how much he'd had to drink that evening. Melville returned with the requested ale, and we waited for him to leave before playing once more. I filled my glass, downing half the contents quickly. We flipped our cards, and the drink sank to the bottom of my stomach, souring. I clamped my mouth shut. How would I recover from this? "One more game?" I asked, hoping to sound nonchalant. Mr. James scoffed, tossing his cards to the table.
"You've nothing left to wager, boy."
My eyes immediately sought the painting hanging on the opposite wall, over the older man's white head of hair. My country house, Thornville Place. My sister would be livid. But what else could I do? We couldn't very well pay all of my debts with the sale of the house anyway. Either way, we were sunk.
Perhaps I do.
I'd grabbed his attention. He glanced at me under bushy white eyebrows, his side whiskers twitching while he chewed on his cheek.
What is it?
Thornville. He stilled, and I tried not to show my nerves.
You serious, Thornton?
I nodded.
What's the wager? He asked.
The house, for all of my debts.
Deal.
I shook my head. All of my debts, James. If I win, you pay off everything. If you win, you get my house. The older man tried to contain his smile, and I knew I had him.
Deal,
he said, this time with more pleasure. A warning rang through my body, but I paid it no heed. The ale had done nothing to blur my sensibilities, for I had drank a tenth of what I'd poured this evening for my friend. I could not find my practices unethical, for they were no worse than what I'd find in any gaming house in all of London. The cards were shuffled and dealt, and there was a nervous energy about us as we played. My hopes rose with each new card, and I found my heart beating in rapid succession in my chest. I dug this hole myself, but I was about to get Sarah and I out of this mess once and for all. It was time to quit the cards and focus on rebuilding my estate. Once my debts were paid, that is. I watched James check his cards, a slight twitch to his mouth that I'd come to learn was his tell. I froze, unsure if he was eager or displeased by what he'd drawn. Swallowing, I laid my cards face up, my breath shallow and infused with equal parts fear and excitement. James locked eyes with me, the whites of his own wide and energized.
Your life is about to change, Thornton.
He laid his cards, and my world spun. That was certainly an understatement. I let out a breath and closed my eyes. It was a done deal now, and there was no turning back.
When shall I move in?
He questioned, sweeping the cards from the table and gathering them into a pile. Leaning back in his chair, he eyed me greedily, and I itched to strike him with my clenched fist. But alas, it was not James's fault I had so stupidly wagered my home. Thornville had been in my family for 300 years. There was likely a line of Thornton ghosts surrounding our table and shaking their fists at me. 'Twas a good thing I could not see my ancestors. "I must remove the heirlooms first, of course," I said, "but I can arrange to do so forthwith. It will not take long to vacate the grounds." James nodded slowly, his hands coming to rest over his ample belly. He watched me intently, and my skin crawled. He was plainly cooking something up in his mind, and I didn't think it was going to be good.
"Unless..."
I did not pay heed to the hope that rose within my chest. I picked up my glass and took a sip as though whatever he was about to propose was of little consequence to me.
"Unless," he said again, "you would like to strike a deal."
I lowered my glass, careful to guard my expression. "I'm listening."
"You've met my daughter, Lydia?"
I searched my brain for the face of Lydia James. She had been present at a ball recently, and we'd been introduced. I was fairly positive, for the name was quite familiar, but I couldn't bring a face to mind. Nodding, I said, "We've been introduced?" James did not move, but smiled.
"Yes, I recall. Oh, she's a meek little thing, who cares more for her books than her own father. She wouldn't make any trouble. In fact, I think she would make a thoroughly respectable wife to any man. Quiet and obedient. What more would you want?"
My eyebrows screwed together. I'd lost control over my features, but I could not follow his line of thought. "What are you suggesting, sir?"
"Do you want your house back?"
Would agreeing be a violation of my pride? Of course I wanted my house back. I simply stared at him, waiting for him to continue.
"Well," James said calmly, "you can have it back, and I will relieve your debts to me, if you but marry my daughter."
I held my breath, watching the older man's side whiskers quivering as he waited. I'd gambled more than my share during my life, but never before had the stakes been so high. A woman's life surrendered to me in exchange for a house? But to be free of the debts I owed Mr. James, to be given the chance to restore my ancestral estate, and perhaps have a new beginning. The temptation was strong, drawing me in with the appeal of a second chance. But the woman? I could not even recall what she looked like. I had met her recently, so if she was horse-faced or covered in warts, surely I would remember. Though, in exchange for my house and relief of some of my debts, it was an enticing prospect regardless of her appearance.
"I will pay all of your debts," Mr. James said.
Had I waited too long to speak? He appeared eager now. The cards were on my side. Clearing my throat, I said, "All of my debts? My debts are numerous."
"And my fortune is sufficient. I will pay off all of your debts, and you can keep your house, if you will agree to marry my daughter."
What choice did I have? Marriage to Miss James, regardless of her appearance or demeanour, was worth what this man offered me. I was a weak man, a gambler, but I was willing to give it all up for the chance to redeem myself. For my family and their future, for my sister Sarah, I would sacrifice. "Very well, Mr. James," I said. "You have yourself a deal."
1. Lydia. I checked my basket, but the books were hidden well, and I was fairly positive Father would not request to look through it anyway. Light poured through the windows of the breakfast room, bathing my aging father in an ethereal light and highlighting his wrinkled face. "Did you have a pleasant evening?" I asked, swinging the basket beside my leg as I waited for Father to finish chewing his toasted bread. He picked up the goblet beside his breakfast plate and gulped his wine before setting it back on the table with a loud thunk.
"I had a productive one," he said.
Oh dear, I did not like the look he was training on me at present. It did not bode well for the busy day ahead of me. I must skirt this quickly if I was going to escape. "Shall I tell Mrs. Humphrey about your recent acquisition, Father? I believe she would love to see the painting for herself. She once told me how she adores landscapes containing sheep." I watched distraction take over his features.
"You are to see Mrs. Humphrey today. A silly woman. Though she is welcome to come see the painting."
I was not going to see Mrs. Humphrey, but that was irrelevant. "She shares our home county, you recall," I said softly. He nodded, and I curtsied. It was done. And easily, at that. I turned for the door and nearly made it out when he called for me.
"One thing first, Lydia."
He cleared his throat.
"I have obtained a husband for you."
I stilled, my hands gripping the basket tightly. Glancing back over my shoulder, I considered his words. He'd found me a husband? But how could he have done so? For at least 2 seasons, I'd had no suitor worth mentioning. And furthermore, I liked it that way.
"You remember Mr. Thornton?"
he continued. "That man? Of course I remembered Mr. Thornton. How could one forget the man who requested a dance and failed to arrive at the start of the music? It had been mortifying watching him dance with Miss Hannigan in my stead. Clearly, I was not memorable to him." I turned to face my father fully. "I do not comprehend." He gave me a condescending smile, tilting his head.
"He has requested your hand, and I agreed. The banns will be posted tomorrow, and the wedding shall occur in 3 weeks' time."
He took another bite of his toasted bread before continuing.
"You will find him to be an amiable husband, I am sure."
My mouth hung slack. "Have I no say in the matter?"
"It is done, Lydia. There is no say to have."
Energy drained from my person. "All is not lost yet, Father. Perhaps we can come to another arrangement? Might we call on him and discuss this in person?"
"The notice went out this morning,"
he said crisply.
"It is done."
My shoulders sank. If a notice was sent to the papers, it was indeed done. Unless... "Father," I said quietly, "what if I refuse?" His hand paused just before his toast reached his mouth. Setting it down, he levelled me with a look.
"You cannot refuse. We've come to an agreement and signed the papers. You will marry Thornton. And if you do not, you shall not be welcome here anymore."
My heart plummeted in my chest. I nodded, swallowing the bile which threatened to rise from my throat. Turning away, I walked from the room with my shoulders set and my back straight. Life had just altered for me in no small way, and I was prepared to adjust accordingly. If only I could understand the motives behind Mr. Thornton's offer. He'd ignored me at the ball only a fortnight prior after begging a dance. I had only been grateful no other person was present when he'd requested the dance, aside from my father, of course, or it would have been significantly more embarrassing. 'Twas a blessing, I supposed, that society was light at present. Nodding to my maid Christine, as she stood waiting in the hallway, I waited for Jacob to open the front door and stepped outside into the brisk autumn air. Bearing trees littered with gold dying leaves set the backdrop for our quiet street, and I inhaled a lungful of the cool air, pulling my shawl tighter about my shoulders while clutching my basket closer to my chest. Glancing over my shoulder to be sure my servants were trailing behind me, I set off for King Street. My steps carried me rapidly toward my destination, as though my feet could outrun my thoughts. I walked a fair distance before glancing back to ensure my servants were close behind me, and instantly regretted my haste. While we walked about London a good deal, Christine was clearly not as eager to arrive at Mrs. Coulter's house as I was, and her red cheeks and rapid breathing were testament of her struggle. I halted at once. "Jacob, please obtain a hackney for the remainder of our journey. I find that my wish to arrive is greater than my desire for exercise this morning."
"At once," Jacob said, bowing.
He turned for the road, and I pretended to find an interest in the contents of my basket to give Christine a moment to catch her breath. One would think after our consistent forays to King Street, my maid would be accustomed to the distance, though I cannot fault her today for not being accustomed to the speed. We arrived at Mrs. Coulter's home minutes later, and the kind, simply dressed matron ushered us into her parlour. My stomach sat uneasy from the short carriage ride, but a few deep breaths later, I was well enough. I sat at the end of her blue brocade sofa and set the basket on the cushion between us. "I shall do my best to obtain funds in the future, but I was hopeful these books would be useful for now." Mrs. Coulter reached for it, moving aside the cloth to reveal an array of children's books. "These are splendid," she said, moving them about and reading the titles. "The novels you brought me last week have already been utilized by some of our more educated students, but I find them a bit advanced for the younger set." I nodded. "I believe I am ready, Mrs. Coulter, if you can convince your husband to accept my assistance." She opened her mouth to speak, but I sensed another excuse and lifted my hands to stave her. "Please," I begged. "I know I have no experience, but I can read, and I hold the desire to help. Are those qualifications not enough?" Sighing, she gave me an endearing smile. "You know Thomas appreciates your desire to help, but he fears for your safety and age. Reasonable concerns, I allow. But I shall not volunteer in the Mint, and I bring my maid and footman with me any time I leave the house. Surely they are sufficient protection?" Hinges squealed as the door inched open, and a pudgy little finger appeared around the edge. Sighing, Mrs. Coulter shot me an amused glance. "They might be, but I cannot speak for Thomas. Allow me to discuss the matter with him further, and I shall have an answer for you by next week." I swallowed, nodding. It was not to guarantee, but it was a good deal closer. "Thank you. What else are the children in need of? Might I produce something for the schools?" "If only 1% of London were as charitable as you, Miss James, the entirety of its population would be well taken care of." A blush warmed my cheeks as I cast my eyes down. I was not looking for praise. "I only wish to help." A small boy snuck through the open door, darting behind the sofa. Mrs. Coulter reached forward and squeezed my hand. "And we are quite grateful, indeed. Now, what do you say to a treat? I shall ring cook right away and request a plate of the divine shortbread she baked only this morning. Of course, it is too bad, my dear. Children are all too busy at present. Or we can invite them to join us." A small blonde head popped up behind us. "I am here, Mama. I am not busy at all." I could not help but laugh at the hopeful gleam in the child's eye. I glanced back at Mrs. Coulter, and the delight reflected in her own caused my heart to squeeze. Her life was a balance of her own joyful family and helping poor London children learn a basic education. I could not imagine a more blissful existence than that. "It shall work out for the best eventually," Mrs. Coulter said. "Do not imagine that Thomas will turn you away forever. He merely wishes to protect you." "I understand," which I did, but I also knew how teachers were difficult to obtain, and I was a willing, free participant. Mrs. Coulter rang for tea and sent an excited little boy to retrieve his siblings. "Might I inquire on something of a personal nature?" Mrs. Coulter asked after the tea arrived. I nodded, accepting my cup and sipping the bitter liquid. It was not as strong as I was accustomed to, but it was a decent blend. Thomas read the announcement this morning in the newspaper before he gave it to our neighbours. I was unable to see it for myself. So tell me, is it true you are engaged? How odd to answer such a question before speaking to my betrothed. Was I engaged to be married, if the man had merely signed an agreement with my father and not asked me himself? I suppose the announcement was more ironclad than any vocal agreement could be. I attempted to refrain from slumping my shoulders, pasting a smile on my face instead. Yes, I am to marry Mr. Thornton. She looked at me a moment, searching my face. Could she see through my false courage? I am not acquainted with the family, Mrs. Coulter said. But I wish you well. I sipped my tea to avoid responding. It felt unreal. It likely would, until Mr. Thornton approached me himself, if he could remember to. Smiling to myself, I turned to the children sitting quietly at the table against the far window. I've brought a few books with me, I told them. They are for your father's schools, but I'm sure he won't mind if we read a few of them now. If your mother could be persuaded to allow it. Allow it, Mama, the children sang in unison. Her endearing smile was broad. Of course, but you must thank Miss James for reading to you. I slid over on the cushion to allow space for the children to sit beside me. For one minuscule moment, I imagined myself in the role of mother, and the idea warmed my soul. Perhaps marriage would not be so horrid after all. Perhaps it would even be a blessing, even if my husband had a habit of forgetting about me.
2. Edward. He'd done it. He'd actually truly done it. I sat back against the cushions, letting my head fall against the top of the sofa. Sunlight streamed between the drapes and cascaded onto the carpet before me. I watched as particles floated within the bright sphere of light and danced about, as if they too had been summarily relieved of a massive amount of debt. I lifted the note to read the words again, allowing my gaze to drift slowly over the last few lines. Everything has been taken care of, and my daughter has been informed of the arrangement. You no longer owe money to any man in London, but you shall owe me if the wedding does not occur forthwith. Freedom was sweet, and my shoulders were significantly lighter for it. I would now be able to focus my attentions on bettering my estate and building a life for myself at Thornville, with my new wife. Swallowing the lump in my throat, I sat up tall. Lydia James. It was my own fault for my distraction at the ball where we'd met, but I could hardly remember what she looked like. Resting my elbows on my knees, I stared, mesmerized, by the dancing particles within the shaft of light once more. James's note had been abundantly clear. He'd relieved my debts, but I was not out of the woods completely until the wedding took place. It would likely be in my best interest to call on Miss James and smooth any discomfort caused by our arrangement and the way it came about. James had indicated that he had already spoken to his daughter. I couldn't imagine her finding the agreement pleasing, but I could do my best to make the transition easier on both of us. I folded the note from James and crossed the room to tuck it into the top drawer of the writing desk situated beside the window. Pausing, I perused the painting hung on the wall, depicting Thornville in all of its glory. I felt a beat of trepidation at returning to the area, but shook my head to ease my discomfort. Surely I was not the only person involved who wished to keep quiet. And regardless, the house was an absolute oasis away from town, with seclusion and beauty found within the grounds and surrounding woods. Sarah and I had been orphaned many years ago, but had spent a good deal of our childhood within those walls. It was an idyllic place to run about and get into mischief. Sarah. I would need to let her know about my impending nuptials. She would likely wish to meet my bride. And now that I'd pulled us from the dark claws of overwhelming debt, she could return to London in style. She might even have a chance of obtaining a competent husband now. Gazing at the oil painting of the house, I smiled to myself, allowing my fingers to trail along the hedge of blackthorn which lined the perimeter of Thornville's garden. It was difficult to tell in the winter time, but the grounds were lovely, and that hedge had once been my mother's pride and joy. I would not mess this up. James had given me an opportunity to start anew, and I would not succumb to the distinct temptation which lay in a game of cards. In fact, I would never, ever touch playing cards again. If I could refrain from such, I could retain what little fortune I had left, and build a life for myself, my sister, and my future children. Oh, and I supposed for my wife as well. Shaking my head, I slung my hands in my pockets and left the room. It would take some getting used to, but I would not forget my wife again. In fact, it would likely be easier once I recalled her face. I needed to call on her, and I would do so immediately. My life had just turned around, and I was not about to waste this opportunity.
3. Lydia. My emotional state felt a tad ragged, so I chose to have Jacob procure a hackney for the ride back home. With an empty basket swinging lightly from my fingertips, I climbed the stairs to our stately townhome in Mayfair and stepped through the open door, nodding at our butler, Harrington, before removing my shawl and gloves and delivering them into his waiting hands. Voices trailed down the hallway, alerting me to the presence of another man in our home. The masculine timbre reached my ears, belonging to a voice far younger than my father's, and causing a wave of prickles to run down my neck. Could this be Mr. Thornton? Hesitating before the looking glass in the hallway, I smoothed back tendrils of my rich dark hair and pinched my cheeks for colour. Anticipation heightened my nerves as I pushed open the drawing room door and stepped inside. Instantly, I felt deflated upon seeing the young Mr. Radmore seated opposite Father in the high wing-back chairs beside the fire.
"We were just speaking of you," Father said,
as Mr. Radmore got to his feet, bowing.
"You've come at the most opportune moment, for Radmore is determined to wish you well."
I curtsied before coming to sit on the couch across from the men.
"I only read the notice this morning,"
Mr. Radmore said, his dark red hair falling forward in the Brutus style and nearly blocking his eyes.
"I am well acquainted with Thornton, as we are neighbours in the north."
The north? I had not considered before how Mr. Thornton might own a home away from London. Surely it would not affect me, however. Ours was not a love match, and Mr. Thornton would likely not mind where I spent my time. A knock sounded on the door, and Harrington stepped forward, delivering a card to Father. A wide smile spread on his round face, and he nodded to our butler before turning to Mr. Radmore.
"You are in luck, young man. Thornton himself has decided to join us."
My heart pounded, colour rising to my cheeks. I didn't know why I was so nervous when the man had sought my hand in marriage, and not the other way around. Surely he had his reasons, though I would not mind learning what they were.
"Good day, Thornton,"
Father's voice boomed, startling me. I forced my gaze to move slowly over my shoulder toward Mr. Thornton, so I might not appear too eager. I was vastly displeased when I finally looked at the man. Had I expected a sort of jolt within me at the sight? He was very much the same as I recalled him appearing at the ball, possessed of a light brown hair and a square jaw, only now he wore an expression of apprehension upon his brow. A light of recognition passed in his eyes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?